It's time for the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're rolling along. Our first guest is Farron Dogs, the CFP, the founder and CEO of Harrison Wallace Financial Group. HarrisonWallace.com is the website. And the markets are not as bad today as they were yesterday, but they're still not good, Farron.
No, they're not, John. How are you today?
Well, I'm fine because as Terry Savage said yesterday, well, what's your horizon? So I was really advocating for her to give me some "we'll get through this" language, but she wasn't much of a mind to do that. What's your attitude today?
Yeah, well, I agree. This is not going to turn around on a dime. I think what we're seeing is, obviously, we've had so much stimulus in this economy over the last couple of years. We've had a Federal Reserve that's been very dovish and that's now turning. And obviously, the result of high demand and low supply resulting in inflation. And this is all coming together to a peak right now. And it's really starting to hit the consumer. And when it hits a consumer, it hits the bottom line of companies, which results in lower prices. So I think, you know, we're going to have, you know, this is going to be a while. This is not going to be something that's going to be as short-lived as the bear market of March of 2020, you know, when it basically went into a bear market territory quickly and rebounded by the end of the year. But all of that being said, I think the investors should take stock in really what they, and no pun intended, but in what they own and why they own it, because there are opportunities here. These are not unusual times in markets. We've seen bear markets before. We're not technically in a bear market with the S&P. We are with the NASDAQ, you know, defined by 20% off its peak. But typically, bear markets, when they do happen, are relatively short-lived. I think the longest one we've seen in recent history was in 2007 to 2009, lasted about a year and a quarter. And obviously, that was due to the credit crisis. And if we look back to that, we saw a lot of things unraveling. We had high unemployment, a lot of uncertainty in the banking industry. And, you know, it was one of those things, well, this time is different. Well, you're right. Every time is different. It's just how we handle it as advisors, you know, counseling our clients, but also how the general investor reacts to this as well. And, you know, I always look back and say, well, if this was the housing market and you saw this house on sale for 20% less than what it was a year ago, what would you do? Would you not buy it and wait for it to go down more, or wait for it to go back to where it was? You know, and, you know, it's just trying to put things in perspective for
what
people.
Make that question sound rhetorical. What is the answer to that 20% off on the house question?
Yeah, well, I think it's time, you know, those are the times of things that if you like that particular property, for example, in this case, if you like a particular stock, then you gosh, a year ago, I wish it wasn't trading so high. I would love to buy some of this. Well, now may be the time to tiptoe into that. Maybe don't put 100% of what you would invest into it, but maybe a quarter or a third. And maybe you'll be able to dollar cost average down into it. But a year from now, and historically, since 1980, we've had 33 corrections, so 10% down corrections. And 90% of the time, a year later, the market is up, and on average, it's been up 25%. So, you know, there is light at the end of this tunnel, but this could be a longer tunnel than a lot of people are comfortable
with. Right. Well, I got to go, Farron, but I need a short answer. So I need a short answer to this. But do you think then that the stimulus was too rich? Is that the problem? Without that, we wouldn't be here? Is that your assessment?
I would agree. That's the one of the big components of this, for sure.
We'll follow up on that another day. Farron Dogs, thank you, sir. Founder and CEO at Harrison Wallace Financial Group, harrisonwallace.com. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Joan Salzman joins us. She's a senior reporter at CNET.com. Joan, what's happening with my bills for AT&T and Verizon, my carriers? What's going on there?
Yeah, so just recently this week, Verizon announced that It's raising administrative fees on consumer cell phone, mobile phone lines, which comes a couple weeks after AT&T said that they were also doing the same thing. So what we're seeing is now both these companies have said that these increases aren't necessarily linked to inflation and those contributions to their top line or to their costs. But certainly for consumers, for people that have cell phones, seeing their monthly mobile phone bill go up is not going to be a welcome sign amid all the other bills and expenses that are rising.
Is it generally understood that one company is the cheaper or the better out there? I guess, you know, I know they all advertise that they're the best and the lowest or whatever. And I guess it depends
right.
on who you are and how you use it and where you are. But are there any absolutes or is it quite variable?
You know, because there's the major carriers and then there are smaller ones. And so because there are a potpourri of smaller carriers, there's the possibility you can find deals that are more suited to how you use your mobile phone. But because the major carriers, the really big ones like AT&T, like Verizon, they have these packages and names for their tiers, they're a little bit difficult to price compare, right? In addition, there's also this issue, you know, Verizon is, in this instance, it's raising its administrative fees. So that's not something that you would, that's a price that's not advertised necessarily. When you're signing up for a particular plan, you don't get a lot of disclosure about just how big those fees are going to be. And so it makes it really difficult for consumers to price compare mm-hmm. what their finer bill is going to look like in conjunction with, you know, if they're getting the phone through the carrier, what's that going to add to the bill? It can be really complicated and make it difficult to price compare between the carriers.
Yeah, I think we've all noticed that. Speaking of calling, though, what about robocalls? There's been some news about that lately, right?
Yeah, the FCC today is voting on its latest anti-robocall measure. This one is going after these international scam robocall campaigns that enter American networks through what's known as a gateway provider, but basically it's designed to stop international spam calls at our borders because, you know, U.S. regulators can't go after bad actors that are operating in foreign countries.
What's a spam call? That's not the same as a company calling me, is it, or is that a spam call?
That can be considered a spam call, but, you know, that sort of call is something that has been regulated for a while, those sort of legitimate spam calls, I guess. What we're talking about here are the disingenuous robocalls that you get that just, at least on my phone, I'm always getting the calls about how my car warranty is is almost expiring, and I don't even own a car. Or the ones that if I'm an English speaker, they're hitting me in Mandarin. It's those that are really difficult to stamp out, and that's what the FCC is trying to do in new and different ways.
Huh. So will I see less of this? Because the one I get a lot, too, is my warranty is expiring and I need to renew it, or I can get help on my student loan. I don't even have a student loan. You know, some of those are just are fraudulent, you know?
Yeah, and the idea is to, you know, Americans have been swindled out of billions of dollars by scams like this. The idea is that, you know, one of the problems with any sort of regulation like this is once there's a regulation put in place or a roadblock put in place, bad actors start working to figure out how to get around that roadblock. And so even though there has been an increasing amount of measures up to this point to try to stop this flood of robocalls that people are getting, there are these loopholes and workarounds and circumventions that bad actors have figured out. And so what the FEC is hoping is that by clamping down on the international-based calls that try to sort of hop, skip, and jump across the border to reach people and appear like they're local calls, they're hoping that that will meaningfully cut down on the volume of calls people are getting.
What's the latest on Elon Musk this week?
Oh, good. Our weekly Elon Musk update.
Yes, yes.
So in the ongoing unorthodox saga of Elon Musk trying to take over Twitter, this week Elon Musk has said that the deal for him to take over the company is now on hold because he has doubts about the accuracy when Twitter told Elon Musk and has been telling its investors for years and years that fewer than 5% of its daily active users are fake accounts are spam accounts. Elon Musk is saying that he has suspicions that that's not true. And there's a lot of speculation that he may be using this as a way to angle for a lower price or even pull out of the deal altogether.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there for now then. Let's do another update on Elon next week and other things in the tech world. It's good to talk to you, Joan.
Great to talk to you too, John, and happy anniversary.
Oh, yes, thank you. Yeah, 100 years today, WGN Radio. Joan Salzman is a senior reporter at CNET. Let's talk to James Royal right now, senior analyst at Bankrate.com. James, a lot of us have thought, well, there must be some safe harbor in this kind of a market, and it wasn't stocks and it hasn't been bonds. And gold's not at a new high, and real estate's treacherous. How about cryptocurrency? What are you saying about that?
Cryptocurrency has fared about as terribly as anything has in this market. It's been on a downturn for the last 6 months, and you've got major cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin and Ethereum down 50-60% in that time period, right? As soon as the Federal Reserve made it clear that it was rapidly reducing fiscal stimulus, the brakes went off everything. Almost everything plummeted, it seems.
Oh, you think a lot of stimulus dollars are what caused cryptos to go up so high?
That's what helped. That's exactly what helped it over the last couple years, whether that's Bitcoin, Ethereum. And it wasn't just that. It helped the market broadly, the financial markets broadly, whether that's stocks. It pushed down interest rates, which helped raise bond prices, and even, you know, complete other things like other alternative assets, whether that's real estate or highly speculative things like wine or art or other things like that. That helped push up all markets.
NFTs have been an interesting sort of, I don't know if that's, well, I think that's a market. That's an investment market, NFTs. Do cryptocurrencies tend to mirror the equities or bonds? What do they shadow or mirror, would you say?
So the research and the experts I've spoken with say that cryptocurrency tends to follow the most risky segments. So it's things like momentum stocks, highly valued growth stocks. So when those go up, crypto goes up and sort of vice versa. And that makes sense because cryptocurrency is really not backed by anything. It's backed by confidence and sentiment. And so when sentiment is high, when interest rates are low, when interest rates fall, that's great for sentiment. Investors get or traders get inflamed with animal spirits and push prices up.
So how much are the cryptos down? I guess it depends on the kind of coin we're talking about, but what are some examples here?
Right. Some big ones. Bitcoin is down about 60% from its all-time high, which it hit just in November. Ethereum is down a similar amount. And, you know, if you look at other things, they're down as much or more in many cases. Just in the past week, we've had a major blow up of what's called a stable coin. It's called Terra USD that was supposed to hold its value at exactly a dollar. And that's just basically completely blown up. And so that's helped roil the crypto market as well and create further confusion and bad sentiment.
Well, James, are these, and I don't mean to belittle or deride investors, but I think a lot of us have either been confused or a little skeptical about crypto. I wonder if crypto is getting what it deserves. It's not as legitimate a currency or investment as other things are, so you took great risk. You enjoyed a great run up, but this is what happens when you're in a market like that. Really, what do you make of that sort of attitude?
I think that's exactly the way to look at it. If you're taking this risk on something like crypto that basically is backed by nothing in most cases, there's no asset, there's no cash flow that's backing it. You know, unlike if you purchase the stock, right, where you've got the assets or the cash flow of that company backing your investment. So that's a tremendous amount of risk that some investors are taking on, and in order to try to reap that potential reward. And so it's a sword that cuts both ways. And if you're involved in that market, you really need to understand the risk that you're running when you're investing in a product an asset that has nothing backing it. So it's important to understand.
Yeah. The run-up on some of those coins was obscene. Do you think those days are over? Do you think that that's not going to happen again?
Well, it's always hard to predict what the mass of people or speculators are going to turn to. So it's hard to see. I mean, you still got substantial value left in things like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and a lot of the major coins. So this market is certainly not broken yet. Sort of fundamentally, irrevocably broken yet. So until we see these things trade down 99% or more, there's still a lot of life here. There's still a lot of belief and confidence. I can't stress that word enough when we're talking about cryptocurrency. Confidence, as in confidence game.
Well, I'm sorry. It's funny that you ended that way. Confidence game is a scam, and you're talking about confidence, the good kind, that there is a lot of confidence in it. You still believe in this kind of currency, right, James?
Oh, I wouldn't say I believe in it at all, because it's not backed by it's not backed by fundamental assets or cash flow, right? So when you invest in a stock, the success of that stock depends on that underlying company. The only thing holding up cryptocurrency prices is literally confidence and that positive sentiment.
Would you advise people to pull out then?
I would say I've never advised people to invest in it at all, because of those tremendously high risks. All you're trying to do here is sell cryptocurrency on to the next investor, hoping they'll buy it for more. And it's what's called the greater fool theory of investing.
James Royal is a senior analyst at Bankrate. You can read his writing on this. Bitcoin and crypto prices are extremely volatile at Bankrate.com. Nice to talk to you today, James.
Thank you so much.
It's 12:43 on WGN. Glad we clarified that point. Let's clarify some other business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Home prices in Chicago dropped slightly in April. Illinois Realtors reports the median price of $370,000 is 1% lower than a year ago. Weak home price growth in the condo and townhouse market is to blame. Chicago home prices have been flat or slightly down for 9 of the past 12 months, according to Cranes. In the 9-county metropolitan area, the median home price was up 4.8%. Nationwide, the median price of homes was up 14.8% from a year ago. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
It's a great time of year, isn't it, Johnny? I know the weather isn't exactly what you want it to be every day, but it's getting better, right? The city's coming alive. People are out again. You can see legs and arms again. Many of the farmers' markets are into their second or third weeks now. And if you're headed into the Loop today, the Daly Plaza Farmers Market is open until 2 o'clock. And our friends from Misericordia are there with their bakery goodies. And tomorrow is a big day for people who spend their lunch hours in the Loop.
Absolutely correct.
Ken Meyer is the commissioner of the Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection,
otherwise known as BACP.
And tomorrow, for a seventh year, the food trucks are back.
We anticipate anywhere from 8 to 12 trucks per week. 12 is the maximum for the plaza regulations.
Pretty much any kind of food that can be served out of a truck is available, and the offerings change week to week. To find out in advance what trucks will be there,
every Monday we post what food trucks will be out on that Friday. And for your listeners, they can follow us either on our website, or we'll post it on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Chicago BACP.
And I can tell you that tomorrow, chicken, cupcakes, tacos, empanadas, burritos, and sausage will be on sale. 11 a.m. till 3 p.m. goes all summer and deep into the fall.
It's every Friday through Friday, October 7th.
If you have a food truck and you want to get in on the Daly Plaza Fest, go to chicago.gov/BACP. And if you're thinking you'd like to start your own food truck, I know a guy.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I encourage listeners who are thinking of maybe wanting to open up a food truck, come down to the Small Business Center. We're open every day, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30, and come down and talk to one of our business consultants. That's what they're there for, to kind of let you know about the process to get a license for a food truck, and then go out and buy the food truck, and then we'll walk you through the process of getting inspected. They're inspected, obviously, by the health department and the fire department before we have them start rolling onto the street.
And good luck. From the farm to your belly, today is National Devil's Food Cake Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth, let's talk about McDonald's today, big Chicago company, and they said they were going to pull out of or sell off their Russian assets. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, we've been following McDonald's so closely. It feels like there's just always kind of a new chapter unfolding in the Russian market, where they closed about 850 stores earlier after Russia invaded Ukraine. And so they just announced just in the last few days that they would be permanently closing those stores in that market. But right away, a buyer has stepped forward. Alexander Govor, I hope I'm saying that correctly. He is a Siberian licensee. So he's been running about 25 stores and is kind of responsible for opening up that Siberian market, reportedly. And so he stepped forward. The financial terms of this deal have not been disclosed. I'm sure it is not a bargain to buy so many stores. There are also other franchisees in the area that are operating those stores. But this buyer is stepping in to buy all of these. And there's some interesting aspects of this deal that I think are worth noting. And some of those, he's agreed to retain employees for at least 2 years on equivalent terms and fund salaries of corporate workers who work in the 45 different areas in Russia where McDonald's stores exist. And to at least through the deal, you know, the deal's closure, and he will honor existing liabilities to suppliers, landlords, and utilities. So that will minimize a lot of disruption. That will minimize, you know, there's 62,000 people that work for McDonald's in Russia. So it's really about kind of making us as smooth a transition as possible. But I think it's going to be a really interesting story just in the next few weeks to watch this transition. It's expected to close in the next few weeks if regulatory approval goes through. So I think it'll be interesting to watch. Obviously, it's not going to be a McDonald's brand. It will be something different that he'll be operating. But it'll be interesting to see what grows up in its place, what replaces McDonald's in that market.
Because I was wondering, so he's buying the assets, but he's not buying the Golden Arches. They won't have Big Macs there.
Yep, that's right. And what McDonald's was hoping is that they could sell to a restaurant buyer. You know, these are these locations that are already outfitted with restaurant gear and equipment, things like that. So that's exactly what they were hoping for when they announced that they were pulling out of that market, because then it's somewhat turnkey. They have to strip out their branding and take down the Golden Arches and things like that. But then as far as having, you know, a dining area with seating in it and restaurant equipment in the back, those are already part of that purchase price.
Why do I have the feeling that they're still going to make the sandwiches and just call them something else? And maybe then McDonald's doesn't care. They can't do anything about it, but they're out of the Russian market. Ford is recalling SUVs due to what?
Well, there's a huge recall going on right now. It's 350,000 vehicles. There's about 39,000 of them in that number that should be parked outdoors right now because Ford says the engines could catch fire even when they are not running. They had some reports of that. One person was even burned, reportedly. So Ford is asking owners of these vehicles to take them to dealers for repairs. So this is really three recalls kind of in one. If you go to the National Highway Traffic Safety website /recalls, they'll tell you all about what those are. But it's really, we're looking at the SUVs. Those are really kind of the most urgent ones. 2021 Ford Expeditions and Lincoln Navigators. Those are the ones that have that fire risk. In the meantime, assuming you can't just drop everything and go to a Ford dealership today if you drive one of those vehicles, Ford is asking people to park outside. So rather than be in the garage, should one of those fires happen and potentially damage your home, they're asking people to park outside away from their homes just until they can get that worked out.
Talk to me about inflation. What's the story you have there?
Yeah, so a lot of economists are really taking note of two big retailers, Target and Walmart, because what we saw earlier in the pandemic was people were doing a lot of shopping there. They fared really well, those two kind of big box stores where you could just go to one location, get a lot of your shopping done. What we saw was some really big drops. So Target reported a 52% drop in profit for the most recent quarter. That's a pretty big jump right there. They said that a lot of they felt like consumers were kind of, you know, pulling back on spending with some maybe potential inflation signals and fears of a recession, things like that. People are going to a little more, you know, scaling back on non-essentials. But they also said that things like kitchen appliances, TVs and outdoor furniture, stuff like that, they said they had too much inventory of it. And then as for Walmart, They said they logged their worst day on the stock market since 1987. They said their profit dropped about 25% last quarter. So a lot of economists have been talking, on some various networks, various broadcast channels, and also to various financial outlets about kind of looking at the tea leaves a little bit of really what does that mean. Home Depot and Lowe's still fared pretty well in their earnings reports. So we saw early on people were really committing to doing a lot of DIY projects in their homes because they were spending more time at home. But Walmart and Target were two places that really held pretty steady. So that they reported such lower earnings. I think a lot of economists are just kind of looking at that as a potential signal that, hey, consumer confidence may not be the same. Consumer spending clearly is starting to drop. And then the question is, what comes next? And what is that signal? So therefore people can do, other kind of maneuvers to try to see what's happening next and predict further consumer mm-hmm. behavior.
Yeah, you can imagine that How Goes Walmart would be a bit of a bellwether for us.
Right.
And we're waiting for a day of good news, and this is not that day. Okay, we'll visit again. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.